Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're going to have another show, of course, dealing with metaphysics and various aspects of science, including physics. We're going to also talk about some things that have not been revealed before. I get permissions, more or less, to do this sort of stuff. From who? I don't know. But yes, I do know. In addition to that, I thought that we would cover something that barely touched on last week, going over the history of ageless wisdom, but there was nowhere near enough time to even get close to this subject in the same show. So I thought we'd deal tonight with sacred planets and evil. Now, this is going to reveal some things to people that may be puzzling to them, if they're into ageless wisdom, particularly if they've studied anything about it. It's very puzzling, and that has to do with, just a whole bunch of areas that have been mystified over millennia of time, some over 10,000, 11,000 years ago. And this information may make it so that people can better understand what a lot of people call the plan. Now, no, I'm not going to reveal everything about the plan tonight, because that really would be premature and probably needs to wait decades before something like that were to occur. But the essence of it, the very basis of it, has a lot to do with tonight's show. So the plan for Earth is to eventually become sacred. So, I mean, it's kind of like you can't really separate them completely. And the plan for most planets in existence, if they are not sacred planets, is to become sacred in some way. And so that is part of the process. Now, I'm going to start off by trying to define what I mean by sacred so that we can all be on the same page. You know, I tend to do this anyway. I like to define things in some easier to understand fashion, and also using the vernacular that I'm preferring to use. So by sacred, I'm talking about a part of a planet's development that becomes effectively free from evil. And it's not a total issue. It has to do with the round the planet is in, because that has to do with a whole series of races of human beings that go through that round, and whether or not they can maintain themselves as human beings free from evil, and whether they can do it in one of three different dimensions, one or more of three different dimensions of time and space. So sacredness applies to a group of races of humans during a specific round, during the time and development of those races within three different dimensions of time and space. Ultimately, the plan to do so eventually involves all three of the human dimensions. Now, why doesn't it deal with the intuitional or Buddhic dimension that superhumans and beyond are found on? And the reason it doesn't is because evil cannot reach there. So talking about making a planet sacred, which be free of evil, from a dimension that evil cannot reach, wouldn't that make much sense? And there would be no reason for such a, that at least that part of the plan, to even exist, because it's not relevant. But it's very relevant where humans are, because evil is a human condition. Now, what do I mean by that? In order to be evil, which is the desire to destroy the creator, you know, that sounds a little wacko, and to be greater in some way than the creator at the same time, the destruction of the creator is necessary, because even evil recognizes that the creator's got some pretty super being powers or whatever, and it doesn't see any way to go toe-to-toe. But if it destroys what the Creator exists for and what causes the Creator to grow, which is life, now you know why life is, right? Then it's doing its job as far as it's concerned. And it, in relative terms, raises its own beingness by lowering the beingness of this thing it does recognize as God. It tries to convince everyone else, other than itself, that God doesn't exist, if it can pull that one out. But even if it can't prove that or convince the others of that, evil at least tries to diminish God so that people, human beings, will reject God. Oh, that's God, just God, you know. God allows bad things to happen to good people, so why be concerned about him, you know, or it. But they may use the male because evil itself is much more male than it is female. I won't go into that tonight, but the point is that you can read about that in Chapter 8 of Life's Hidden Meaning. But the important thing here is that the sacredness idea has to do with dealing with something that is inherent to people, because people are the first form of life in terms of the hierarchy of life that can fully sense its own creator and do so on a fairly consistent daily basis, because we have senses that allow us to sense God, whereas animals by and large do not. They can borrow a little bit of ours and see in reflection through that something about God, but they can't truly understand God. We can't. That doesn't mean we do, and it doesn't mean that we do because we just sense God. It also means that we also go past the sense of God into the realm of trying to understand God and trying to co-create with God. So those are things that are very big deals. Evil wants to eliminate that, if at all possible, and to make it so that they, the evil ones, have the power that God, that they assume God has, and that in reality they actually are powerless too, except with other humans. In other words, they can't go toe-to-toe with God. They're not going to go out and say, oh, let's go fight God. But if they destroy humans, and enough of them, and they steal the power and energy and even senses of other humans and use that for their own bodies and activities, and they like to enslave people, that's a big deal to them, then God is diminished and they achieve what they think are their goals. Of course, in the long run, this whole thing is silly as all can get out. If you do the zero-sum factor, which actually this is one of the few zero-sum games, the result is that eventually they destroy everybody, including themselves, if they were to win on a particular planet, and they have. They've won on more than planets. They've won in solar systems all the way out to an entire galaxy. Actually, there's about two. The second, for one is completely dark or evil, and the other one's almost there, in the universe, that I am aware of or was taught. And that's a pretty low number, because there's a couple hundred billion galaxies, give or take. And if you were to consider the percentages, it's too small of a percentage. The only problem is that evil is the biggest copycat in the universe. They aren't that creative. But when it comes time to be making duplicates of a system, they are truly experts at making it happen, so to speak. There's a lot of reasons for this, and again, you might want to read about that in the textbook, because it's a little off the subject from where we're going. But still, if they're so good at it, the danger is, even if you got one or two out of a couple hundred billion, well, given enough time, they could kind of shift that around. They could maybe get hundreds of thousands, millions, maybe eventually a billion or more galaxies. That would be a very bad outcome. And they would certainly conglomerate them or have them within a denser area. They wouldn't have them evenly spread out. And that would become a very big problem for everybody. They could theoretically collapse the physical universe. That is a big problem because the physical part of the entire universe is where God challenges evil the most and human beings the most, and humans have the most opportunity to become most like their creator, but also the most opportunity to reject their creator and become evil. So it's a tough call. It's very necessary because it causes the most amount of growth of God and people and everything else. But it also does so at enormous cost and suffering and forces that lead to destruction of our bodies and senses. And eventually, some element of consciousness can easily be diminished. So this is where the battleground is for the most part, but it isn't the only place. We need to recognize there's really three places that evil's aiming at, not just the physical world. I know that a lot of people think that it's only the physical world, the corporeal part of existence, the material. That's certainly true. I mean, if you were evil, which I hope evil's not listening, that evil would seek first probably to dominate the physical part of existence, simply because it's a chokehold. You've got, in order to create new beings, new humans, and this is especially true between rounds of a planet, you've got to incarnate. You have to incarnate in the physical world. And so no new souls could enter into a planetary system unless the physical part of that planet is able to grow and to develop life. If that part of the planet is unavailable, you got a real problem. Now, usually planets don't develop where their physical side collapses and the other two sides, which is the astral and the lower and higher mental side, continue to develop. But actually, it has happened, and it has happened in a planet right next to us, Venus. So it's a very strange thing that we have such odd circumstances happening, and there's a lot to be gained in understanding this process that we're in, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. I will use Venus as an example because it's one of the oddest of examples, and if you can really understand what I'm going to explain about it, you'll get way ahead of the game in understanding what sacred planets are about and what the plan is about in relationship to Earth and Venus and Mars. I'll throw that into the hopper if we can finish it tonight. So there's a lot to talk about, and this is an interesting show to me because I learned about all this stuff a long time ago. To be frank, 1989, it's a long time, oh my God. A long time ago, it's going, you know, that's 20, whatever it is, 24 years, you know. I mean, so it's a long time. And my learning about it kind of changed my whole grasp of understanding what the plan is. And it changed my attitude about everything. It actually caused me to want to become a spiritual teacher. Because I began to realize that all this mystical stuff is really hiding more than explaining very much, and it was meant to do that until now. So it gave me some pause, and I started to, you know, change my life plan somewhat because of it. All right, so let's talk about then what the plan for sacredness is for most planets that are in physical form and that have the three lower worlds as its developmental scheme, it's called, and that is going to develop seven rounds of seven races of human beings. And, well, each round will be a race of seven, contain seven races of human beings. Each race has like seven sub-races of human beings. It kind of staggers the mind. So huge numbers of people are going to be created over time. Each round produces a more advanced human being. But all rounds eventually try to achieve a degree of sacredness. There are three degrees of sacredness. The first degree is to try to become sacred in a physical sense before the planet is destroyed physically. That includes the etheric part, by the way. Then the next is to become sacred in a astral sense, and the final is to become sacred in a mental sense, but not necessarily in that order. The plan for each planet is different, and some planets do not seek to follow that challenge. As a matter of fact, some either seek or end up developing a sacredness in the monastic or mental realm before there is a sacred astral or physical. And it's easier to do that, by the way. There are a lot of drawbacks because sometimes evil is very smart about this. It will muster its forces to not make the battle in the mental world when there are such easy pickings in the physical. Now, this is, what determines this is the amount of forces. Forces are the horror story of Earth, as an example. Earth is one of the most forceful planets in a physical sense ever developed in the entire universe. I'm not just talking about the physical itself, but in all of time and space, forces are worse usually in the physical realm, and Earth has one of the most forceful histories of any planet. Whew. That's pretty amazing to say it. We're in the upper 1%, and somewhere beyond that, maybe the upper 0.1%, of all planets that are physical in form. And the majority of planets are not even physical in form. So you have a really strange kind of world when you talk about Earth. And Earth has challenged itself in its plan to not give up the physical realm, no matter what. So if it goes down, it's going down physically. That sounds a little wacko. And in a prior existence of Earth, incarnation we'll call it, of Earth, in an earlier incarnation of our sun, some people call it Sol, S-O-L, that particular planet gave up the dense physical and had life only in the etheric. It could not support, very quickly in its development, it couldn't support dense physical life because it didn't have very long to develop itself. Those kind of stars that was the earlier incarnation of the sun don't last very long. Just a couple tens of millions of years at most, and they blow themselves up. They really go kaboom. And they're completely different kinds of solar systems. So the planets on them, if there is a dense planet, which there was, have different plans. And Earth in that system, its plan was to only develop humanity in a mostly etheric way. Well, that's way simpler, way more easy. If you heard last week, you'll understand what I'm saying. And you might want to listen to that show if you didn't hear it, because it kind of lends itself to connecting what I'm talking about right now, which was the history of ageless wisdom for Earth in this time, at this time, in the second incarnation of our sun. But in the first incarnation, the whole thing was etheric in terms of physicalness, if you want to call it that. Now, etheric is electromagnetic beings. Now, they're like ghosts to us in this realm, but to them, that was normal. And that's where the so-called battles of evil, good and evil, took place. And they lost the battle. Now, you could say, wait a second. They lost the battle. Now, we're trying to do it in the dense part of existence. Isn't that going to be even more difficult? Yeah, we got to make up for what they did. You know? And some souls today are from then. That they came here from life from that planet's existence, and they're here now. Many more came from many other places to work on a planet, to develop life on a planet, to become a co-creator with God on a planet in the physical realm. They came from easier worlds. Many of them came from even some that were sacred. But they wanted the experience to bring a world under very difficult circumstances, but very creative ones, from a nightmare of atrocities, of evil, in a historical sense, to enlightenment and to sacredness. There are, within the planet of Earth, there are a number of things to understand. The first is that the process of enlightenment comes through the mental world, that light, and then the astral world, and love, and finally the physical world, where power becomes, or the expression of the third way, the third part of God's mind, becomes a dominant feature. And these are part of the plan for Earth, but not necessarily, as we'll discover, the plan for all physical planets. All dense physical planets don't do that. But we are following that particular road, which is a bit different, and that means that we're attempting to bring in these elements into the adoption of a, we'll call it, a new method of being physical, in physical form, not in dense physical, not just etheric, so that evil will not be able to enter the domain of the physical world. Now, what does that mean? It's sometimes referred to as a doorway. The door to evil in each of the three dimensions is always through first the mind, then the emotions or feelings, and finally the interactions of people. Always. That's the door. The door can be closed if there's enough light, using the method that we're using on Earth, if there's enough light so that people can see the evil. That's the first door that you can close to evil, and that door is the door that we're choosing to deal with first. It's odd, because to date we've been unsuccessful, and it usually requires that people develop themselves to about where we are before the real tests of it come out. But there are other ways of doing this. But the good news is that if you fail in that in earlier times, which we have, you get extra opportunities to succeed rather than doing it reversed, because each time there's a failure, there's an improvement in the mental senses for some people. And so you end up with a reversal of the darkness in the mind, and that helps future generations of incarnations of various souls. That's good. Then, astrally, the same is true in the second sense, that when it comes next, the ability to feel evil and feel what people are feeling in evil improves as people do fail, but then succeed at a later time, either in that incarnation or sometime later. And so there's some progressive process to this whole thing. I don't want to get too much progressive ideas here, because I'm not talking about the political progressive. I'm talking about the progression of the plan. And it's much better. It's really slow, and it produces tremendous problems of force in the physical realm. So you end up with many more volatile, we'll say, warfaring and very hostile kinds of activities of evil, but they can be eventually turned around by people feeling the evil and understanding in a mental sense the evil, and that can turn it around. And so the wars are really strange on Earth in comparison to some other places, because evil almost always wins the beginning of the wars, where physicalness is, the force is their weapon, and they usually win. They win the beginning of the wars, they sometimes win the middle of them. But it's as the wars drag on, if they do, and evil tries to prevent this from happening, by the way, the emotional or emotive type parts, the astral part, and the particularly the monastic part, the mental part, starts leading to enlightenment in those bodies, and goodness many times is victorious given enough time. Interesting problem. Now, it's true that if the human beings could just figure that one out, they could probably beat the evil a lot faster. But they don't. The plan is going in a certain direction, and it just doesn't lend itself to that, because there's almost always a disadvantage in this particular kind of plan activation for human beings to succeed on a mass scale at the beginning of an evil conflict. And there's lots of them there every day almost, and they're constant barrage of them. Sometimes they're huge, big armies, and sometimes they're just little small things that they do a lot of skirmishes with, but they keep it going. And the physical world is their playground. Now, to shut the door in the physical world, that means that the activities, the interactions of people, have to become by a significant majority, but more than 50% for sure, of the people that are physically present and alive in the dense world, to become, they need to become good. They need to become more godlike and creative of virtue. So as the virtue is created by half or more of the people, that closes the door to evil. That's not likely to occur here on Earth in any immediate sense, but it is the potential of the plan to have that happen. And as time goes by, there's some inroads and some improvement. And then as time moves in, we'll say, failing ways, when evil takes over a country, or, and that goes on all the time, and people are enslaved, it goes backwards. Enslavement is their main objective, regardless of what you want to call it, mental, astral, or physical. They want to enslave. Enslavement means that now they've got control over a bunch of other people, and they use the power from those people. They literally suck it from them, like sort of vampires, but on a more general basis than just the physical. They're not just sucking the blood, they're sucking everything. And so they're getting all this energy. But at the same time, the human may become more aware in their astral and mental nature of the evil in the process. Maybe. It's a hope for it. And that's what usually does happen, but it just takes a protracted period of time. Sometimes more than one or two generations before there's a noticeable difference. That's most unfortunate. Each generation means like 20 years. So it could be 20, 40, 60 or more years before any significant change takes place in the physical realm when evil takes over. That's a tough, tough problem. And, of course, by the time you get to the third generation, the first one is already dying or dead in the past. Now, people are living longer these days, and in the very far past, they live very long. And the longer someone can live, the more chance they have for reaching more enlightenment in all their bodies and closing the door to evil in general. Remember, no matter how enlightened someone is mentally, and I want to make this point very clear, if they are not changing their interactions to be creative of virtue in the world here, in the physical world, they are not going to prevent evil from taking over. So, I mean, that's a part of this whole plan situation that we need to be recognizing. And, again, I understand and I apologize that it seems a little convoluted and difficult to follow. Especially when we start talking about other planets, it's going to become even more difficult. I'm trying to start with the easiest because we're familiar with it, there, right? Because we kind of got, we have a history. We can look at our history. Anybody that looks at a history book would be able to point at, I don't know how many incidents that explain exactly what I told you over and over and over and over again. And you'd say, well, gee, that's why things keep happening over and over and over again, because we have this conflict of good and evil. And why doesn't everybody see that? I don't know. I mean, I do know. And it's because they don't have the light in their mind, and they don't have the love in their heart, and they certainly, in many cases, are not creating much virtue while they're physically alive. It's a tough problem. Definitely a tough problem. All right, and something else I want to mention, and it's a sort of an aside. As someone becomes aware of this plan and some of the things I'm talking about, they become less and less afraid of death. And they, you know, they move from, and this is a phrase in a famous poem, from death to immortality. The reason it is they don't become immortal. We all are immortal in the consciousness sense, but they live as though they are immortal, and that's a different thing. When you live in a way that you're immortal, your whole life changes. Your fear of death goes away, and your fear of most things in life goes away. Now you still might be afraid that the world might lose out to evil. That's a concern that we can call fear, but even that, in the long run, and it could be a very long one, will be resolved if people have a sense of immortality. Now, okay, so Earth has a plan, and within this plan, the door to evil needs to be closed. That door has three different facets to it. It's the mental, the lower mental, the astral door, which has subworlds in it, of course, and the dense physical along with the etheric. Evil still has a wide open door here in the physical world. We see it all the time. And it's pretty operative in the sixth and seventh subworlds, as well as the eighth sphere, where evil is centrally located, in the astral world. And then, some of you may not know this, some of you may, if you've again read or listened to my shows, etc., that evil has gained a significant foothold in the seventh and sixth monastic or mental worlds, but has not, at this time, opened and gotten through the door in the mental part of the fifth subworld. So there is where the struggle is at the present time. If we lose the fifth subworld, then there's a good chance that our race, the whole sub-races, will not complete. And the humans of this round will not exist much past a certain point, and the whole planet may not go further. Because you have to have people succeeding in the perennial round of development so they can move the whole thing forward in the next round, so that those people can be even more advanced, and you know, et cetera. If you don't have the foundation, then you lose out. The planet likely would fail. It doesn't always have to be that way, but for Earth's choice, Earth's system and its plan makes it virtually impossible for Earth to survive if it fails in the dense physical or in the mental. This is strange. We won't succeed. Could we fail in the astral and succeed? We could go one more subworld in the astral, which is the fifth subworld, and have it an open door to evil, which it is not at this time, and we could possibly still succeed. But evil doesn't concern itself with that. Again, it's going after the prize. The prize is twofold. Get to the fifth mental, and that will allow it to succeed in the physical, because enough people will become convinced that evil doesn't exist. More and more people will become atheists. And not that that's a state of evil, but it's a step in the right, in that direction, we'll call it the right direction towards evil, which is the wrong direction. And they will also have the ability to use tremendous amounts of force in the physical world, making suffering such a common denominator that virtually no place on earth that you could possibly live would be anything other than enslavement. And we're moving in that direction. I don't want you to think we're very far away from it. We are not. We're within 50 to 100 years of that happening, even right here in the United States, where I'm speaking from, and many other countries that supposedly are free. So freedom is going bye-bye. And when freedom goes bye-bye, we all go bye-bye on Earth anyway. Now, why would Earth choose such a ridiculously hard plan? I mean, why don't we go some other direction with this thing, huh? And there are some other plans that have been tried. And let's just briefly touch on Venus, and then we'll go deeper into it after the break. But Venus chose a very different plan. It decided that it was going to completely eradicate evil in the middle world first. And you could say, well, wait a second. You can't do a whole lot of physical creation if you're just trying to make the mental world perfect or something like that. But their idea was to maybe scrap their world if necessary, or at least put it on hold, so that Earth, because Earth failed in a prior time, and Earth failed, and Mars is not getting closer to human development. It really only went up to animal development. You can read about that also in Lysenia. And so they wanted to be sort of... you might say a big teaching source for Earth and a help to get humanity going when it needed to get going. Now, this you can hear about that from last week's show. And so their plan kind of dovetailed. They are a full round, more than a round, ahead of Earth. They have completed their fifth round of development, and they closed the door to evil into their monastic world. So if you go to Venus, you only want to go to the Venusian middle part because there's no evil there, and it's a great place to get educated, so to speak. But it's not so great a place if you go there in a physical sense, because the only part that has any life in it on Venus, and I've said this many times in the past, is etheric, sort of like Earth was before it was in its first incarnation when it was earlier sun. And so, and even that, the beings that are there, evil has had a serious impact on them. And unfortunately, the physical planet has been put into a kind of, we'll call it a state of moltenness. It's just very hot and extremely uninhabitable for any kind of what we would call physical form of life. It's just plain too hot. So that's something to consider. Now, we're going to take a break at this point, but I do want you to think about this, that with everything I've told you, you've already probably know more about sacredness of planets than you could read any place else, and we are just starting the show tonight. So we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes or so from right now, and we'll get into much more.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about sacred planets and evil. And I hope you heard the first part, because you probably will be a little bit lost, at least for a while, if you didn't. And so I apologize, but I hope that you can catch up. And if you did hear the first part, I hope you got some of it, because it was important as a basis for where we're going to be moving to. Okay, so let's talk about other planets, and Venus is kind of an interesting one because it's different. It's way, way different. It's so different from Earth, it's almost like reversed. And so I think by talking about the opposite, we might be able to get a better understanding of Earth, which really is my point tonight. I really don't want to make this about Venus or Mars or some. I'm going to also talk about a planet that I'm familiar with. It's in another part of the galaxy, if you can imagine that. But so let's talk about Venus. Venus kind of looked at the whole situation and said, well, it knew that Earth had failed in its etheric form in the first solar incarnation. And it was well aware of that. And it was also aware that Earth was going to go through an accelerated development by at least 10 million years, which is a lot. And it's not a lot in terms of the total life of the planet, but in terms of the development of human beings, that's a quickie. To save 10 million years on the development of human races is a very significant amount. And I'm talking about physical human races, not the etheric forms. That's a whole different thing. There are a couple races of humans at the very beginning of development, the fourth round that we're in, that were just only in etheric form. And again, that doesn't do it in terms of being able to create much more of our creator. So very little virtue can be gained. Some, but not much. The first dense-formed race, as I talked about last week, was like 16.5 million years ago. That's a long time. And the Venusians were actually involved in that to a significant level as the race developed, the races, I should say, but mainly the first dense physical, which is called the Lemurian race. I talked about that in length. And they got more and more involved, particularly the fifth sub-race of the Lemurians. They got really deeply involved in helping that race to develop more mental sense, develop more light, and to be able to use that light to see evil so that they would regulate themselves more in the physical form. It makes sense. It was really good. But they had a kind of strange thing because here is a dense physical race, and the entire planet of Venus just didn't do too good in a dense physical sense, because they put most of their emphasis on defeating evil in the mineral world first. And as a result, evil actually, more or less, destroyed a good deal of the dense physical, or all of the dense physical parts of the planet, including people. So there can be no new souls that can develop on Venus at this point. None. Zero. And there are a few souls that are caught just in a kind of astral, etheric loop, you can call it, where their life, they can continue to live their lives etherically and astrally and somewhat mentally and keep going around the network. But the odd thing about it is they're not new incarnates. Nope. They stay as they were. Now, you would think that's a good thing. But if you get up with a turkey, you know, one of the ones that turn to be more dark, they become consistently more and more dark. And I can tell you some of them have actually, at least a few, in rare circumstances, have come to Earth and done some havoc here. So there's a problem. So that you have a few Venusians who are really hostile beings. Technically, they are planetary avatars because they come here with a new kind of consciousness. The problem is that it's horrible. It's evil consciousness. But technically, that's an avatar. I mean, in a purely definitive but not good sense. And so we have had this, and we have it now. There's also another strange, quirky thing about the Venusian system in comparison to Earth. And that is their astral world is very strange in comparison to our astral world. Evil has adopted not just, and this has to do with the moonless planet. It's very complicated to describe all these things tonight, but evil has managed to not only live in its own A-sphere, which we have, of course, on Earth, but it has taken over the seventh subplane astrally. But it is closed. The door is closed from the sixth subplane and up, which is actually better than Earth, by the way. That's a better position. Earth is not closed to evil on the sixth subplane. So you have a really different kind of astral nature in Venusians. Some are amazingly loving beings, and some are actually amazingly unloving. Yet they all seem to have very truthful natures in terms of their operation mentally as teachers. They're terrible in terms if you put them in a position of power, because then they become maniacal. But as teachers, they are bad. Even some of the ones that could be bad in terms of their maniacal nature are really not bad as teachers. Very strange place. Very strange place. And so you have this, almost a remarkably different kind of human being in comparison to what we consider to be like the average human might be on Earth, if there is an average. And so they're just way off the charts in some other kind of region of humanness. Now, another thing to talk about that's relevant here is that the majority of Venusians live in the mental world and do not spend time in the astral or physical world at this time. They're in a place in which they're waiting for Earth to reach a certain point, either to become destroyed, or that'd be terrible, or to advance itself where Earth closes the door to evil in a physical sense. That's what they're waiting for. But they're not just waiting. They're trying to do good things. They do some teaching for the more advanced spiritual disciplined people. And they also occasionally intervene in some unique ways. I'm not allowed to talk about some of this stuff. I have to be careful. But as a general rule, they are they're somewhat dissociated and just in a waiting state. They're in a holding pattern because they've already gone past the fifth race. That means they're ready to start the sixth race. But in order to do that, they have to have a physical world, and they have tied themselves to Earth, as I explained last week. They didn't even become mentally a sacred world until the near ending of the Atlantean race of people. And they did so by making great sacrifices and doing some things that were important in the mystification of ageless wisdom some 13,000 years ago. When they did that, and some tens of thousands of years even before that, they prepared for it, they actually gave up a lot and did so to try to save Earth. They didn't do too bad of a job, by the way. So this made them mentally sacred. Believe it or not, it's amazing. But they still haven't saved their world to continue on with the sixth and seventh races, in a sixth and seventh rounds of races. Each one's going to have seven races in it. Until Earth moves ahead and is able itself to start doing some pretty remarkable things. One of those is to save the damage that has been done to Venus by the last sub-races that were in the fifth round that failed to defeat evil in a physical sense. And that gave up the physical planet and what would have or could have been created in a virtuous sense. And so that physical planet now is like 800 degrees Fahrenheit. The pressure is so great it would crush you in a second. Pressure means it's like, think of, we have atmospheric pressure here. It's 14.7, give or take, pounds per square inch if you're into pounds or if you're into kilograms. It's dumb enough. But the point is that tremendous amount of pressure is on us. We're used to that, and that's what we call normal. But imagine if that was increased 100 times or more. That would just crush you. And in some cases, it's considerably more than that on Venus. Yeah, you just turn into a pancake, crunched. Because the atmospheric pressure is so high and the temperature is so high. There's actually a relationship between those two. But it's an easy thing to solve if you're an advanced civilization, which Earth could become within just 100 or so years. I know that's hard to believe today, but if we become enlightened and if we create enough light, we're supposed to go over there. I know it sounds weird today, and take some of the atmosphere from Venus, and we will use it in part both for our own moon. I know it sounds ridiculous, right? And in some respects, convert some of it for various fertilizer products and also some of it for air. Now, you might say, well, I thought there's no oxygen there. It's all carbon dioxide and sulfur dioxide and terrible things. Well, some of it's not too great, but you can change the carbon dioxide to oxygen. You have to use some energy, but it is possible to create oxygen out of it, and we actually have methods of doing that right now. Not methods that will do it for a whole planet the size of Earth, but yes, we can do it. If we were to do that, Venus would end up being pretty close to the same exact amount of gravity as Earth, a bit warmer than Earth, which we might want to create several moons, not just one, around Venus, which would help do certain things in terms of changing its inside over-vulcanization process, and would also shelter it from some solar radiation that would lower its temperature in relative terms. Even though it's closer to the sun, we could get it down pretty close to what Earth is. And then we could go and do some things with some of the resources from Venus on Mars and take some of the parts of the asteroid belt that's between Jupiter and Mars and bring that into contact with Mars, making it a little larger, a bit larger actually, and with an even denser core, maybe not quite the same size as Earth, maybe two-thirds the size of Earth, but with a denser core, it would weigh the same, and the result would be, it would have the same mass, and it would have the same gravity, which is a little hard for some people to get. But if something is more dense, it actually makes up for its physical size, and so we could do that. And there's reasons you wouldn't want to make it the same size as Earth, but you could get away with what I just said, and you could achieve a whole planet that is completely capable of supporting life, particularly if you took some of the ice asteroids and comets as well, and you brought them in contact with Mars as it was heating up from adding all the asteroids in the belt. It would get very hot. And then you could melt a lot of the ice, and you would have water and oceans, all kinds of other things. And there's some water on Mars. It's just below the surface. Mars would warm up very quickly, and because of its inner core being more dense, it would be hotter. And the amount of heat it would give out would be trapped by the new atmosphere that was brought over from Venus and other places. I know this sounds absolutely ridiculous, like, well, this guy's into science fiction, but I'm saying we could actually do this maybe 100 years from now, although it's hard to believe it today. And the process would then result in having an atmosphere very amenable to us with a temperature similar to Earth again, and all three planets would kind of be synced. There could be life on all three worlds. And that's a good outcome. Actually, especially if it's not evil. So again, the object here is not to make one sacred planet, but three. We need to remember also that Mars would be starting its development of human beings at that time. So just as Venus helped Earth develop human beings, Earth will help Mars to develop human beings. Those human beings, by the way, will come from Earth, most likely. All right, so, I mean, they're not going to pop up on the planet in an evolutionary sense. They're going to be people who come from Earth. All right, so can this all be done? Is it really possible? It is, because it's part of the plan of the three planets, and it's certainly doable from the standpoint of technology. Here on Earth, we are about 100 to 200 years to doing everything I just said. Everything. Now, that's assuming we survive and we don't enslave ourselves with evil. If the planet becomes much darker than it is, we'll never get there. We will destroy ourselves, and there will be none of the things I'm talking about. But on the other side, there's a real positive future if we can just get through the next decade or so, or two, and that's the tough part. That's a very tough part. All right, so, again, going back to the sacred planet business and evil and what went on in Venus, Venus is just a strange place. That means if you went on a trip, and some people do, to Venus, you have to get there through the mental world, because it's, we don't have to, but it's too long a trip if you try to do it even, you know, in any, even the astral plane is not fast enough usually. But you can do it in, you know, an hour or less if you want to go through the mental world, because everything is much less dense. It moves a lot faster. The speed of light is over 1,000 times faster in the mental world. So the ability to move in space-time, it's way, way faster. And you can get there, as I said, less than an hour. That's a reasonable period of time, by the way, to travel there and back again. You can, you know, get back. And when I say less than an hour, it's actually closer to a half hour. So it's probably round trip a little over an hour. And that's not bad. That's a pretty good deal, depending where on the middle, in the middle world you're actually traveling from. Most people that go to Venus travel to the higher realms. Now, it's hard to get there because usually you need the assistance of a superhuman being because the trip going there requires such high levels of manasic, or mental consciousness, with a small amount of buddhic consciousness as well. So not just every human being is going to be able to travel to Venus. If you can go to Venus, they actually have classes in the middle world on Venus, the lower middle world, and in some cases, depending upon how developed you are, you can go to some that are in the higher middle world. Those are challenging and not easy to remain fully conscious in, but people can do it. Depends on who you are and how well you respond to the energies there. And you meet people who are different than people from Earth. How are they different? Well, they understand wisdom and truth at levels that humans here really just don't get it. They are, as teachers, outstanding. And they actually teach beings that are more advanced than they are. Now, that sounds weird. Let me try to explain why that could be the case. They understand the mental realm, and they can teach about the mental realm, in many cases, better than super beings who don't. They just use their mental bodies to be of service to people, but most of the time they're not doing a lot of mental teaching. And they, of course, can teach about the Buddhic and the Atmic planes and talk about nirvana and all this stuff. But talking about truly truth and wisdom is like the forte of the Venusian person. And they do resemble human beings in terms of appearance, human beings from Earth. They are human, and some are superhuman. The most advanced teachers are superhuman, but there's a significant number of still human teachers that do a pretty good job of teaching. So one could say that Venus is totally its own thing. It's got its own system of everything, which is not closely resembling Earth, because it went through a different way of development. And it is sacred in the mineral world. What that means is there's no evil to be found there. Evil doesn't have any propaganda, spin, lies. Anyone who's mentally in the Venusian sphere can instantly see and understand evil. That's a good deal. Now, if you're evil, and maybe in etheric form or astral form in the Venusian world, you know cunningly how best to fool people, like from Earth. And so you could be a very dangerous person if you come to Earth and do something here. And we have had that. And the Venusians don't stop that from happening. You say, well, why don't they just go out and they grab that person, or, you know. And they don't believe it's their right to interfere. And, again, they believe in a very wise way that humans have to be challenged by some of the most difficult challenges. And one of them is the failures on their own planet. They find these failures to be challenges so that Earth may more quickly recognize some of the worst kinds of evil that haven't even developed here yet. So when I talk about planetary avatars, it's kind of the inverse message, but it is going to be a way that we may be able to grow mentally beyond the point where we are today, humans on Earth, and actually save ourselves, weird as it seems, by these super evil dudes that come on occasion from Venus. But not from the Venusian mental world. They, of course, they use their mental minds, but they oftentimes are denizens from the etheric or astral parts that are evil. And again, remember, the evil part is not just the A-sphere. It includes the seventh and, to some extent, the sixth spheres. So you got evil going into parts of the astral realm on Venus that is more encompassing than it is here on Earth. that means they're better at dealing with emotions and swaying the emotions of people in a dark way than earthlings that are evil are. And they're also better at persuading people to use their physicalness and their senses for evil things and follow evil ideas in physical form better than people from Earth are. And they're way better at hiding evil from anybody on Earth because they got the mind to do it as well. I mean, they are scary because they're way better than the evil people here in physical form or even astral are. So this is a tremendous scary kind of person. Okay. So here we've got something that really is most uncommon. Sister planets, so to speak. Brother planets, if you want to look at it from the other side. Trying to assist each other, where even the bad from one may assist the other planet in some ways by challenging it. And sometimes the worst of evil is what breaks through to people because the suffering is so great that in such a short time that these people cause to lead them to wake up. Oh, I guess there really is evil, so there might really be God. You know, that kind of thing. And it reverses the preponderance of the time they are actually getting people to give up God. They usually are atheists themselves, regardless of what they tell people. And they get other people to follow that. But in the long run, they may get people to find God. They just got to do their bad deed for a long enough time without destroying the world. But if they go too far and destroy the world because we let them and we participate, then that's the way it goes. So these are the big challenges. Now, can people from Venus do anything else to help us? I mean, a lot of people have asked me this, and I can tell you, yes, they do some secret things I'm not allowed to talk about. And they also do some things that I can kind of mention. Besides teaching those that can come to their world, which is a good thing, I mean, if you can get there, you know, but very few people are going to be able to get to Venus. The other side of the fence is they, at times, because they can, even from their dimension, deal with people in the mental world here, they, at times, help out in the mental world. They help solar angels, and they help servers, mental world servers. And so they have some activity that is involved with that. Not very common, but they have been assisting from time to time. Then they do some other things, and again, like I can't talk about, that are pretty far out there stuff. Okay, so let's look at this whole thing. Sacred planets are much more complicated than I've talked about them before because, frankly, some of this stuff I didn't really think was ready to be heard. But I think we're getting there, so I'm talking about it more. And if we're looking at how some planets turn out, I'd like to turn our attention to a constellation called Corvus. What is Corvus? It's a constellation I'm a little bit familiar with. And Corvus is hundreds of light years from here. It's not next door, okay? It's 100 or more light years away. And Corvus is the raven in our understanding. Yeah, Corvus is an important thing. As a matter of fact, the name Korash comes from Corvus. The name Corvus. Corvus is mostly seen in, almost exclusively, you can barely see it sometimes in the year, elsewhere, but it's mostly seen in the southern hemisphere, so you may not be familiar with it. It only has a few stars, so a couple that are named and at least one that is not. Let's say pretend that the one for sure that is not has a planet on it, and I know a little bit about that planet if it's the only one star that it has, because there may be other stars that are related to it, but we haven't seen them yet. And I know we haven't found this planet. Now, this planet is about the size of Earth, and it's a sacred planet. But it's a sacred planet along a different ray, because Venus is along the fifth ray, Earth is along the third ray in terms of its development. And this planet is a feminine planet. It's not as masculine a planet as Earth or Venus. And it has and specifically a more fourth-ray nature to it. But it also, during part of its development, was strongly a second-ray planet. So it has a mixture of both. It depends what realm we're talking about. That's the thing that kind of changes with sometimes as you deal with realms. And especially incarnations of planets, which can be vast periods of time. But this is the carnation with the star that we're familiar with, the sun that is there. Okay, so it's a sacred planet. Now, how did it develop sacredness? It's a, we'll call it today a 4/2, right? Sacred planet. Okay. All right, we'll go for that. And what's so different about this planet is that its plan is was focused from the astral aspect of its nature as being the first place it became sacred. Now, that's different than either the physical Earth or Venus, right? I mean, it's like, oh, where did that come from? So, you know, and by the way, Mars, I mentioned Mars. Mars is focused along the sixth ray, so it's a feminine ray, but it's a very different kind of feminine quality than the fourth, second is. Okay, so this planet developed its sacredness by coming up with a way to balance what was unique forms of teaching. It created some great teachers, so that in a spiritual sense, the astral world was, because that's where it first became sacred, the astral part or nature of people was not only, we'll call it, loving in a way that was highly unconditional, which makes partly wise, we'll call it, loving, but not in a purely mental sense, but it would be considered mental if it was understood that way. And it also created the balance in the astral world of this particular planet. It's not our astral world. Remember that. That's, each planet has its own realm of dimensional worlds that are directly surrounding it. And so this planet's astral world has a unique balance of, we'll call it, spirit or the spiritual side of people, and their senses. Their senses are uniquely balanced to their consciousness, and they learned how to overcome evil by keeping them very, very, very closely matched. Their plan was to achieve this goal some time ago. They did this in our time, several million years ago. And so they have a sacred planet that's several million years older than where we are today. And even before they were purely sacred in the astral sense, they were better at achieving a less forceful physical world. It is and was a physical planet. They also have a mental world that has a great deal of light in it with significant elements of wisdom, but is equally creative, which is unusual, to its, we'll call it, wise and humble side. Now, creation is kind of a strange thing, because we always think of creation as being a very, you know, that's light, that's the first part of God's mind, you know, that's the big deal. But light is really a combination of the first and second rays. And So this particular planet, we'll call it Planet X, in the constellation Corpus, the Raven, has a peculiar nature to it, in that it it maximized its wisdom, in a mental sense, to the level of its creation, and it chose to be creative only as far as what it created did not encourage more evil or darkness, and led to its further sacredness. It actually had a system that it used, both sociologically speaking, in terms of races of human beings, but even more so in a political sense, although politics is the closest word I can think of, but it's not exactly the same kind of politics we're familiar with, and in an educational sense, it was able to achieve this consistent balance. So that when something was created, the challenge that most people chose to face was to make sure that the creation did like less harm or no harm, and provided the maximal level of, especially love, because this is the. It turned out to be that the Astroworld grew the fastest in terms of being sacred, in comparison to the other two. Now, this particular planet has moved ahead. It isn't; it was just sacred in terms of the astral, but at this point, it is now sacred in all three dimensions of time and space. Also, the beings on it, because it was a world that was 3+ million years ago, a planet that had finished or was finishing the fourth round and going into the fifth. Now it has finished the fifth, and the sixth, and that is in the seventh round of its development, which means it's a very advanced planet, and it's creating some super advanced beings. Human beings in the seventh round are similar to fifth and sixth round superhumans. If you can understand what I'm saying in terms of relational development, not in terms of, you know, total consciousness, but in terms of relational development between one race of people and another, there's some accuracy to what I just said. So it's a very interesting. Now, here is a planet also that has a very different plan. It went through a completely different developmental history than Earth or Venus or Mars. And it, as a matter of fact, its star is completely different in its whole relationship to its planets, which I'm not allowed to talk about. But it's completely different, and that star has already been discovered as a star, but the planet isn't, because it's relatively small and pretty far away, and right now we don't have the technology, although we will within about 20, 30 years, I think, to be able to actually see the planet, or at least know of its existence. Seeing it might be a whole other thing, but at least know it exists. So that's a fascinating thing, isn't it? I said a lot of very specific things, so I guess if you're an astronomer, you can start doing your homework on this, and you can probably figure out exactly what I'm talking about and maybe start doing some looking yourself, although you'll need equipment a little more sophisticated and better than what we've got today, and probably definitely a outer space telescope, not one that is Earth, physically on Earth, because of the atmosphere obstructions. It's just too far away to be able to resolve. No matter how big your telescope is, if the atmosphere is there, it's going to cause some problems. But we're building those telescopes. We're going to build them on the moon. We're going to build them on asteroids. We're going to have them in spaceships. So, I mean, we're not that far away from that. It's just a matter of a few decades or so. It's really not. But are we going to survive? Are we going to all become slaves and destroy everything we've done? Maybe. I don't know. That's the problem we're in right now. Now, the good news is there are lots of planets that have become sacred, a huge number. So I don't want you to think like this, oh, we've got no chance. I mean, this is a losing proposition. We're never going to get there, you know, because look at this. Actually, there's a pretty good chance. I mean, if you go by the percentages, granted, Earth has such a huge mountain decline in terms of getting over these incredible obstacles that we've put in our own way, this choice is made. But we're doing this because if we can beat it on its own, in its own realm, which is really the physical, and close the door, at least to the physical world, evil becomes so weak, and it really does destroy itself. So it's a good deal. I'm going to talk more about destroying itself in a minute, but I wanted to, I think I'll give everybody like a, oh man, can we have a rest here? You know? So I'm going to go ahead and give you one, so to speak, and I'm going to talk about something else that is happening, and I thought people should be aware of it. I talked about it last week, and you may want to know more about it. I'm going to start another, and I've done a bunch of these, Life's Hidden Meaning study groups. Oh, I think this one is going to have more emphasis on people who aren't necessarily just in the Phoenix area, Phoenix, Arizona area. And we've had people in almost every study group call in from someplace other than Phoenix. But now we're probably going to have at least as many or more people, looks like more, from someplace other than here, which is okay. The only thing I caution you is if you're an East Coaster, hopefully you can stay up late enough, because at this time of year, of course, we don't go on daylight savings time. That pushes everything an hour further. So if you're, say, on the East Coast, it's 3 hours later. And the time that we've come up with is Wednesday evenings from 7 to 9, which could be as late as 10 to 12 p.m. for people on the East Coast. That might be a little late for some folks, but if you can handle it, you can join. And it's still open. I don't think we're going to get it going because of just practical, simple things until the middle of August. We were going to try to get it going by the end of this month. I don't think that's going to happen at all. So the middle of August sounds like a good time, right? Maybe after some people have spent some time away or on vacation, hopefully. At any rate, we're looking at Wednesday evenings, starting sometime. I'm not giving you an exact date, but in the next month or so. And it will be on, from 7 to 9, as I said. And there's no cost. You don't have to, you know, like send in an application or do any of that stuff. If you're interested in it, you can call 800-777-7850, or you could always email me, but you can email thoughts@whylifeis.com. You could email Niles@whylifeis.com, too. I guess another email will probably get you there. But thoughts@whylifeis.com is what we're looking at, so you're more likely to be noticed if you send it there. And we're building a system so that people can, everybody is going to be able to hear each other. And eventually we're going to get this camera going, so everybody, if they want to, with, you know, this sky thing and all that, you can try to maybe tune in that way, too. But at least you'll be able to have communication going back and forth between everybody who's there, everybody, not just me, and those people who have called in. And we've got some great little two-way kind of teleconferencing speakers that really work great. And we think that the whole thing's going to be effective. I don't know for sure, but that's what we're hoping. And we'll see if it really works. Okay, so this is something, put it on your calendar, and if you really want to be in it, please call now or email now, because we're doing it now. If you want to know more, just more about it, that's okay. You don't have to commit. You don't have to call and say, well, I know if I call, I have to sign up. No, if you call, you can talk about it, see if it's going to be right for you. If not, that's fine. No problem. There's no demand here that you have to do anything. Thoughts at Why Life Is, and that's the ampersand sign, A, you know, with A with the circle around it, thoughts@whylifeis.com, or it's 800-777-7850, and that's us. So you can, and remember, I'm going to be teaching this, so, you know, you're going to hear me talk to you. We will have conversations about anything you want to talk about, but we'll also be reading about a couple pages a day. That's about what it's going to average out to. It's going to be about a year, by the way. So we're not rushing through this huge book, which it is. And we're not going that much reading. I mean, 2 pages a day. I know they're not easy, but most people can read it, and you're only meeting once a week. So if you think about it, well, it's 14 pages a week. You can read that much. Most people can read that much in a single day, I would think. And so it's not really that cumbersome. Not really. And it's a great opportunity to learn things with other people. And to discuss things with other people, not just with me. There could be, well, it's likely going to be more than 20 people. It could be as much as 30 people. I don't think it'll be much more than that because it might become too cumbersome. But in any case, 20 or 30 people gives you a lot of people to discuss things with. You can also trade phone numbers or emails, and you can communicate with other people, get to meet some other folks. Sounds like a great idea. At any rate, again, Life and Meaning Study Group, I'm going to be teaching it, and it'll be Wednesday evenings, 7 to 9 p.m. That's Arizona time, by the way. Remember, we do not go in daylight savings time, so it's going to shift around for where you are if you're out of state. And if you're in state, you can still participate. You can also call in, even if you're, let's say you're far enough away, you say, well, I don't want to really travel there, but can I still call in? Sure. Yeah, you can call in from anywhere. And or call or email thoughts@whylifeis.com. All right, so let's back to tonight's show. We've been talking about sacred planets and evil, and so far it sounds to me as though tonight's show is revealing quite a bit about quite a few things. What has each plan got involved in it? The first part of it is to go from darkness to light. That's the first thing. And for people to begin to have more light than darkness in their thinking so that they can see evil. So the first part of the plan involves that. The second part of the plan, if you want to call it that, is... And in this part, this applies to each of three different dimensional issues in time and space, so we should be aware of that, too. We need to get rid of illusion, which is sometimes called the real from the unreal. So you have to get rid of illusion after you start having more light than darkness inside your mind, or even your astral body, or your physical. But the mind is oftentimes where light is considered to be the most focused element in terms of change. There is some light issues in the astral body, which is an improvement of sensation in the astral sense, which is feelings, and the clarity of feelings so that you develop super empathy and empathy. And there's light, there's clarity in terms of light in the physical body, but that's in interactions that are cooperative and intelligent. Okay, so the next thing is what I said earlier, that we need to, after we get over some of our illusions, we need to find that there is immortality, so we become unafraid of evil. If you're afraid of death, evil will almost always win. Even if you have gotten over the darkness issue, in your mind, even if you're half the time or more not even in illusion about what's going on around you, you still can be made afraid if you aren't convinced that you are immortal. I know it sounds weird. So you have to get over the fear of death. So that's another thing that is part of the plan. And it's in the succession that I'm talking about that is part of the plan. So you need to recognize that. And then the final part of the plan is strange. It's giving up the idea that the universe is based upon some chaos and just chance and probability, and recognizing that there is a being that has created this, and the being, at a minimum, in its own realm of expression, is a thing of beauty rather than just chaotic and crazy. So this is part of the plan, too. And sometimes this is all stated together. and you will hear things like, lead us, O Lord, from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, from death to immortality, and from chaos to beauty. You may have heard that, but you didn't know that that's actually part of the plan. And it's the part of the message of the soul, and that's the poem that comes from, to us. And it's a really important thing to realize that we not only have to do that just in one way, we have to do it in three ways. We have to do it through the three different ways I expressed a couple minutes ago, through those three bodies that we exist in. And depending upon how the plan is expressing itself, which we know on Earth how it is, the different bodies become more preeminent depending upon what the plan suggests is needed. On Earth, the physical world becomes the dominant battleground, unfortunately for you. So secondary is, in our world now, is the monastic world. I know that people think it's astral, but believe it or not, the greatest danger right now, and the greatest fight, so to speak, is in the mental world. We lose the mental world, we're going to lose the planet, even though astrally we may be more loving than not. And truly that's true right now. We are more loving. We're more loving than people are as is. But we may lose the world because there's so much untruth in our thinking, and darkness is trying desperately to win the fifth subworld of the mental world. And when it does that, it's curtains for us. Be aware that propaganda in spin, or there's different words for it now these days, is their prominent way of dealing. The evil is a prominent way of dealing with the struggle. And the methods that they're employing involve the mass communications that have developed since the turn of the last century, since about 1900. With the advent first of radio and television and the internet now, and cell phones, of course. So what's taking place is that the speed of communication and the amount of communication that can be done within any period of time is so dramatically increased that it makes things that rely on lying, such as propaganda, effective. And they were ineffective before 1900 because they were too slow to create a lie that couldn't eventually be discovered before it did much harm. Nowadays, you can create enough lies so that nobody ever figures out that you're lying. Or if they do, it's irrelevant because you're on to 20 other lies that have more devastating effects on people. And this is the present method of evil. If you know someone who's doing it, and you can see them doing it, you're seeing evil. And you already know that, by the way. But it's a fascinating problem because technologically it's operative with the development of the fifth subrace of humans, and then, worse, the going out, so to speak, of focus of what is known as the third ray. The third ray is just a ray focused on our planet that helps to develop the third energy type of sense in each of our bodies, or sometimes referred to as the throat chakra. And that was, it was easier to be selfish and keep that going in people while the third ray was in focus. That's gone, or going. So that it's diminishing rapidly now. It has peaked. It peaked last December. And it's going to continue to diminish each year. The good news is that it's going to become more difficult for selfish people to use the throat chakra that way unless they are evil, because evil doesn't rely upon the rays. They just steal the energy from everybody else. So they don't care about the rays. But for people who are pre-evil or prior to becoming evil but just selfish, it's a big deal. They become more and more senseless and more easily, we'll say, affected by, we'll call it, the dark side. And that's the problem. Those are the folks that are getting eaten up. and their senses are being stolen and used. They are the new, we'll call it, disciples of the dark side. And their numbers are increasing radically. Radically, it happened since about 2007. And there's a large number of them. And those folks are the ones that could end up enslaving the world. They're in every country. They're not just in one place or another. And they're, at the present time, the most vulnerable, the most easily turned, and the most difficult to change. Tough for us, huh? So this is a circumstance in which a sacred planet, of course, is unaffected by this. But Earth is extremely vulnerable. And our ability to change this white nail is limited. Some of the limitations come from these problems, the quagmire, we'll call it. And that is that more people than not in the more developed and educated countries have developed considerable levels of egotism. And egotism is the friend of the dark side, today especially, because egotism, especially when it's centered more in the fifth mental part of the brain, not the brain, but of the mind, is very prone towards losing its sight of, we'll call it, truth coming from both logic, reason, and the ability to have a sense of other people's thought that is accurate. See, when you can't think in ways that other people are expressing themselves, you become isolated, and the isolation leaves you open to the gibberish created by the dark side through propaganda and just greed, added by a tendency to make people feel that they are right and everybody else is wrong, as long as they agree with the dark ones selling the message. And they have a unique system of doing this these days, especially if you're here in the United States. It's amazing how the present administration of the United States is very good at doing this. The process is so, we'll say, well slicked up and planned that you've got to be way ahead of the curve to stop it, because you can't fight it as it's happening, because they're way ahead of you by the time you get anywhere in proving anything that's true. So you've got to anticipate and be ahead of where the present propaganda is. It's not easy. And so far, nobody's been successful in dealing with it. And the president is an expert at this darkness, a real good expert, better than just about anybody in this world. It's a tough thing, and I don't know if we're going to succeed in this. That's just the United States. The United States is the leading country in the world, even though part of the plan, his plan, is the president's plan and the administration's plan, is to weaken the United States. But that's so that, in an odd way, other countries can be brought into this dark sphere. Instead of fearing the United States, they want to, in some way, use it. And they want that. That's like the hook, say. So come on into our sphere, and you'll get what you want. Yeah, it's a serious problem. All right. If we're going to get sacred, we've got to change so many different things. And the third ray has made it a lot more difficult. When is it going to be gone, at least in any significant amount of crystallization, which is our big problem? Crystallization just means that the way people thought or have thought selfishly is extremely difficult to change as the ray diminishes, because they can't learn anything new. They can't learn anything new. Whatever they have, it's all selfish thought, remains, and it grows. So that's the problem we're facing. All right. But the end of the line, so to speak, for the third ray in its expression, even in its crystallization effect, is about 2025. I know that's still a ways off for some people, but it is weakening as I speak. Not by the minute, but it is weakening. And it is, in general, a huge problem, but not the worst that we've ever been saddled with. Probably the worst times of crystallization came about during the beginning of the Renaissance in our recent history. Where if you go to prehistory, it happened during the Atlantean period, at the end of the 7th subrace of Atlanteans. It also happened in some terrible ways between the 5th and 6th subraces in Atlantis. So, I mean, they had some really bad times, worse than what we're experiencing in terms of the number of people who were killed and the overall destruction of their civilization. But we are facing significant civilization destruction because the third way is about civilization. That's what its expression is in terms of human civilization. And so, for humans it is. And so it's a tough one to be, we'll say, separate ourselves from or be detached from, because it's everywhere. We are having its effects seen every day in every way. When someone doesn't call you back, and they did used to call you back 5-10 years ago, or they used to email you back, or they used to anything, and you get nothing these days, that's the effect of the third ray crystallization. If the information you get is just a bunch of lies and nonsense, same thing. That doesn't mean that 10, 20, 30 years ago people weren't saying a bunch of nonsense. But there was a lot more, we'll call it, generalized truth that people talked about and people did. These days, you almost have to check out to the infinite level almost to get to even any semblance of truth about almost anything. Everybody says, well, the Internet helps. No, not really. The Internet is so filled with untruth and nonsense, it's no more truthful than anything else, and in many cases, it's very untruthful. We get flooded with information that is of no value, or it's counter to being wisdom or truth, and it is a bunch of lies. One of the things that evil does somewhat deliberately is that it lies about things it doesn't need to lie about. And you might say, well, why would you do that? So, you know, a waste of your time if you don't need to lie about it. But see, it's trying to get people to get used to lies and to not question lies. And that's its ultimate goal. Its goal is not to, in some way, only lie when it absolutely has to lie. It lies when it absolutely doesn't have to lie, just to get people used to lying. And that's some of what we're seeing these days. Also, there's another peculiar thing about the third ray, at least at this particular junction, is that we have, of course, three bodies with senses in them, and the mental body has a higher or lower aspect of senses. But when you look at the whole thing, the bodies really don't work together very well. Our bodies are quite separated, most of us, and so you can have strange effects. You can have some people with fairly good throat chakras in their physical body and really terrible ones in their mental body, or vice versa. And this causes some real strange kinds of folks with all kinds of problems coming out of this. It's making the world seem chaotic. And maybe it is actually making the world chaotic. And remember, part of the plan is to change chaos into beauty. Well, the problem with that is, how do you do it when everybody's going the other direction? They're on the wrong train. You know, it's like, hey, oh, wait, you're going the wrong way. You know, and it's pretty hard to convince them that that's what they're doing. So this system is becoming more chaotic by literally the day, and certainly by the month, and that is causing people to see no truth in anything, no value in anything, nor sometimes to care about anything. Lack of caring is a huge problem because it's a sentiment of the astral nature. And when people stop caring, they stop loving. And then their astral senses separate from each other. And instead of being empathic, they can still feel, but they can't feel what other people feel very well. And that produces a very, very hostile world. So this is what we're heading into. And some of it is coming about, again, because of the crystallization effects, because evil's working its thing, and because the plan is basically not working at this time. The plan has to be restored. It isn't in functionality, we'll call it. And it's less functional today than it has been in a very long time. So we're getting into that kind of ultimate zone of, like I said, the whole thing can fall apart because the plan isn't really developing. It's sort of devolving and falling apart. This is my concern. Every day I face it, I think about it, I see what I can do to change it. I hope this show is doing something, but I do it more in many other ways with many other people and have all kinds of strange life experiences. It's a funny thing, but evil is so pervasive now that you can't depend upon a person's title, position, who or what they are, to not be inundated, even grossly affected by it, under the most, we'll say, special circumstances where they're supposed to not be evil. I've seen this. That's the scary thing about it. When you see those kinds of levels of proficiency of evil, then a lot of people are on that train to ultimate destruction, and there may be little that can be done to offset this. Now, I will tell you, I'm going to kind of switch gears here because that's a lot of negative stuff in the last few minutes, but there's some good news, and I'll try and explain what it's about. The secret things, which I can't tell you about, that even the Venusians are attempting to do, and by the way, some other even more advanced beings from other solar systems, is to try to preserve what's left of truth and unconditional love and, you know, some intelligent levels of interaction together. They're trying to preserve this here on Earth. And you can say, well, what the heck are they doing? Because I don't meet any aliens, you know, who are coming up to me and saying, hey, let me be some help, buddy. They are doing things, and some of it, again, I can't talk about. But the things that I can talk about, which aren't exactly specifics, are more general, is that they make it more and more difficult for evil to be able to continually do its destruction without paying a significant cost. Let me give you an example. The dark side doesn't have that many dark masters. Actually, it has almost an equivalence in terms of the side of light. And that number is small. It's like 100 few. It's not much. The dark side is a little bit more than the side of light, but collectively, if you were to average them out in terms of their overall lightness versus their overall darkness, they're awfully close together. And so what does that mean? Well, it's harder for the side of darkness to keep their integrity with their sense if they don't keep gaining more power. It's a power thing with them. And the power they gain over others is mostly from enslavement, sometimes through destruction of bodies and senses, and other times it's through indoctrination before there's enslavement. The indoctrination side is we are the visitors, sometimes are able to make a difference. Without going into specifics, in order to indoctrinate somebody, you not only have to convince them that untruth is truth, right, and that God either doesn't exist or God's irrelevant. Those are some of the things you got to convince them of. But that's probably the peripheral convincings. The thing you really got to do, if you're going to nail it down, so to speak, to indoctrinate somebody, is you need them to take action on the thing that you're indoctrinating them about. So in other words, if you want to indoctrinate a bunch of people, make them, you know, super communists, I'm just using, they're a good people group to use, and you say, okay, we need all of you to go out and do these deeds, throw garbage cans through people's storefront windows and flash tires of nice cars that are probably owned by capitalists, you know, and scream epithets to everybody who is within screaming distance about all the bad things that they're doing by being successful in making money and or making things or helping people to do that or whatever they do. And, you know, you're an anti-capitalist, you're an anti-goddess, you're an anti-this or that. And so that's what you do. Right? Yeah. And the interesting thing about this is that the indoctrination alone doesn't achieve that. You've got to have more than just the indoctrination. You've got to have the instigation to go out and actually maybe for more than a day or two, you're going to need to maybe give up part of your life. You're going to need to probably spend some money and time, maybe even travel to places that you're not familiar with and spend some money getting there, maybe. Or travel in some bus with a bunch of other crazies like yourself, which may not be that accommodating. But the point is that I'm trying to get to is that since indoctrination requires activation to be successful in the evil realm, okay, there is a interesting problem that they have. And that is that the antithesis of growth and activity, even if it's unintelligent activity, is in opposition to the indoctrination process, where you're trying to get people convinced that they should destroy goodness and destroy the lives of other people. The process of the destruction causes a negative development in growth in the person doing it, that is indoctrinated. So the indoctrination may be there that they can give lip service to, but the more they try to act on the indoctrination, the more it causes disability and a lack of, we'll say, ability to survive. And so if they do it for a few days or a week or a month, suddenly they're starving and they get confused. They don't know what or what why they're doing certain things. They may do things that are stupid that may cause them to even get harmed, even by themselves. So the process has with it a built-in protection mechanism, if you want to call it that, that the indoctrination of people requires, in order for it to be effective, activation, and the activation, because it usually is beyond the consciousness of the person to achieve without causing self-destruction, becomes self-destructive. And so, within a short time, the system falls apart. Interesting. Very, very interesting. So, if you look at this from the two sides of the poles, the exact opposite is true not in indoctrination, but for people who find light and wisdom and truth, they go out and they say, we are not going to give up until we are free and we have a loving, good society of people that live together, and they activate in ways that is for the long term. Those that are indoctrinated in the dark side have a very short-term activation process and give up very soon after they started. Well, they might last a week or two, maybe even a month, but they're not good for years, that's for sure, and several months is probably beyond their ability as well. And you could say, well, what about all the terrorists? Well, terrorism is a different segment. There is indoctrination in it. There's no question about that. But the activity is usually very short-term, whereas you can call it planning. The length of time it takes them to truly become active could be prolonged, and usually is fought in numerous ways. So very few of them succeed, but of course you only need one, and you have a building fall down or people getting killed in various ways, bombs going off or whatever. Yes, that's true, and it certainly can disorganize and disorientate people, but it won't as itself take over society. The thing that terrorism does the most is it causes people to become afraid and they give up their freedom, which is exactly what the dark side is trying to do, and then they become enslaved. Easy to take them over once they're afraid. So the whole principle in the plan is defeated in terrorism by going after those elements of the plan that I explained, the four elements, and knocking off two or three of them through one or two terrorist acts. Smart move. Very effective. But it doesn't work to go out and get 10,000 or a million people organized and active for a week or a month, because if they're on the dark side, they lose their vitality and their energy to do so because they don't have consciousness that will preserve them, and they will waste and squander most of their energy and resources, and quickly they will fizzle out. Interesting thought. Interesting idea. So that's kind of the way it works, and the plan on Earth is to use these ideas, and the plan is also that in ways that I can't speak of, they are helped by people, believe it or not, from other worlds, including Venus, but it's not the primary one, but and a few other worlds that we're unfamiliar with. And so this is a strange thing, that things are going on, and we don't know they're going on, and the ways that they're doing it, I can't tell you, but they are effective, and they sometimes lead to these things falling apart even quicker, and to the disablement and disbanding of the dark side's activation in short order. That's a good thing. That's a very good thing. I know there's going to be people who are going to email me and say, can't you just tell us what they actually do? Because I really like to know. Yeah, I'm sure you would like to know, but so would the other side like to know what is known and what's being done to change what's known. You see, I don't care if anyone really knows that some people know about the dark side. I'm trying to reveal that, of course. But if certain things are being done that are causing it to trip up, I certainly won't want that to be that kind of like out there. Probably not very helpful to let the enemy know how you are defeating it. It's probably not a good plan to do that. Okay, so let's talk about some other facts, other parts of sacred planets and evil. So because we've got a short time here, I'm going to have to sum up and we'll be going. Evil in general is looking for any opportunity in which it can, again, destroy good, which is the growth of God, and cause itself, in relationship to God, to look more powerful. Remember, it doesn't go toe-to-toe with God. It has no chance, and it knows that, so it's never going to do that. It just destroys God's growth, which is life itself, so it goes after all kinds of life. Now, one of the things that evil chooses to do on a planet like Earth is to decrease the, we'll call it the amount of variability and the choices of life in general to grow into various different ways. I'm not talking about humans anymore. I'm talking about all life on the planet. So it does go after species other than human. I've been talking about humans because that's where its primary emphasis is. But we need to include this and to recognize that, especially with the third ray effect right now, humans use the lower kingdoms as an expression of their own senses and abilities to do things. They incorporate the lower kingdoms into their civilization, and then they use those things, and it doesn't matter what they are, to be able to improve their abilities in almost infinite number of ways. Now, the dark side finds that as a good, as a vulnerability, because if you're depending upon a lot of, you know, animals and plants and minerals to supply you with the needed resources to be able to keep your society going and growing, and part of that growth help, could help to develop more of God, which is a good thing, then why not, if you're evil, thinking as evil does, why not make it so those some of those choices are gone? We'll make certain plants disappear. We'll make some animals become hostile and even negative in their approach. And minerals will become in short supply to supply energies, and maybe will become a way of choking off the atmosphere, changing the weather in some way, doing some bad stuff. We'll do all that, and maybe the way that you accumulate energy will be a way, energy supplies will be a way to go after society and destroy it. Also, exaggerating any of those things is maybe more of a weapon than the things are themselves. Let me give you an example. Climate change. Oh, it's going on everywhere. But you look at it, and it's not going on everywhere. It's going on in some places. And most of those places are not on the physical planet on top. They're in the deep oceans. They're in some actual Earth deposits. It's weird. But that's for right now. I mean, given enough time, it's going to affect everything. But for right now, and right now is the next 10, 20, 30 years. So it's not an immediate issue, as some people make it sound. But if you exaggerate, and then you say, oh, yes, it's really, really bad. We're going to have summers that are 200 degrees. We're going to, you know, everything's going to go so extreme. If you buy into that, then you do some extreme things that destroys economies, wipes out energy supplies, and before long, you know, we're living almost in the Stone Age, and our economy is non-existent. Going broke is a good way to get people to become enslaved. So you should be aware that poverty is an excellent source of slavery. It's no coincidence that the majority of people who are enslaved are in or close to poverty. So the dark side sees this as a means of manipulation to exaggerate and to even in a real sense make certain things worse. And it does this. It really does. I'll give you an example. There's a bug that came from Vietnam and some other places like it. And it got into the United States, mostly in Florida to begin with. It made a kind of detour. It went into a couple of South American countries and eventually got into Florida. And this bug likes to suck on leaves. But when it does, it has in its gut a bacteria that infects the plant, and it loves citrus trees. And it causes the tree to become sick just the way a person would, and the tree dies over time. But the fruit first becomes useless. The fruit is of no value. You can't eat it or anything anymore. And the tree might linger in death long enough so many other insects that feed on the tree get infected from the tree itself. Oh, my God. That's a horrible thing. And we're losing all the citrus trees in about 10 years from now. There may be no citrus trees virtually anywhere in the world. I know that sounds like crazy, but it's true. Now, where did that originally come from? Well, things like that come from the dark side, believe it or not. I know it's hard to believe this, but the things that we think are just, oh, it's just a genetic thing, survival and all this stuff, there is an engineering going on by the dark side. And I'll tell you that on the side of light, they interfere with that sometimes. And I can't tell you how or why, but there is. So wherever there's a proactive forms of destruction of civilization, there's usually some active things going on. And just as we don't see one, we don't see the other. That doesn't mean we better be doing something like genetic engineering to try to stop this disease, because while penicillin, you can give the plant penicillin, stops it, it doesn't necessarily cure the disease. It may stop it for a while, but the penicillin also gets into the fruit, so what is good? Heck, what good is that? You want to eat a bunch of oranges that suddenly you have an overabundance of penicillin in your system? I don't think people are going to want that. Then they got this other bug that comes and attacks. It's like a wasp or something. It comes in and attacks, or a hornet, the first bug. Okay. But the problem is that no matter how many of them you kill with the bug that's eating them, enough of the first one survives so the disease keeps growing. That isn't going to work. All right, so what we got to do is genetically alter slightly the trees so that they cannot be victimized and the germ can't cause them to get sick. And there's ways of doing that without causing the fruit to go bad or have negative effects on human beings. We have to do that very carefully, and we have to do it right away. But we're not, because the dark side keeps us looking in other directions while this keeps going on. Have you heard about this before? You probably haven't. And that's the problem. And yet, as I speak here in the United States, 30% or so of our citrus is already gone. And you don't even know about it. That's a bad news situation. We're talking about Florida, California, some of the most abundant places of growing citrus fruit, and other kinds of fruit, by the way, too, are already infected and dead. Boy, this is a serious problem, and it's much more serious than we realize. Yet, again, most people don't know about it. This is evil. Anytime you have something so profound taking place and virtually nobody knows about it, you can bet it's evil. Bet evil that is actually proactively causing it to happen in the lower kingdoms. How does that take place? They've got to have the opportunity to take a place by greed. The people that brought this disease in weren't supposed to be bringing in the trees in the first place that were infected. They did so because they were trying illegally to sell and bring trees that they shouldn't be doing, and they were infected with the eggs and eventually the bugs. So you see, it's the emissaries of darkness are sometimes the low ones. They're not the super brilliant ones. They are willing to do virtually any small thing to, in a greedy way, make some money or get something that they want. And this is how evil is. It can enlist the aid of who knows how many people, vast numbers, doing their own part in this to destroy life. The civilization part is very significant right now. And this is just one example I'm giving you of tens of thousands of ways this is occurring all at the same time. It's almost impossible to fathom. Now, there's some help that I told you about, which I can't explain what they're doing. And if there wasn't that help, we'd have no chance. But even with the help, right now, we're losing ground pretty quick. Not only will there not be any citrus, and maybe not much of fruit either, of any kind, but it eventually will become many other parts of what we consider to be our civilization. Many, many things are going to happen. And it's going to become group together and escalate. So that it'll almost be impossible to maintain our civilization as we know it. We literally will be back hundreds and hundreds of years ago in the way we'll be living. That's the time to enslave everybody. Poverty will become a way of life for most people. And even for the people who, quote-unquote, remain some wealth, with some wealth, they will do so much to just to try to keep their wealth that their life will become a hell in itself. It's a scary, scary proposition. The answers are not easy. And sacredness of planets is, while it isn't rare, for a planet like Earth, it seldom turns out. And there's very few planets like Earth, but for the ones that even come close, they don't succeed because there's so many ways they can fail. Now, I hope I'm making some inroads here. If you're listening to this far, I would guess that you want to do something to solve this problem because, I mean, it's not a small one. The first thing, if we're looking at the doctrines that I spoke about, the plan and how it's initiated, etc., we need some light. Hopefully this show will help. Read some books. Get out and look around you. Stay current with current affairs. Read about all the things that are not working. And see where you can make a difference in changing those things as they are right now. Because no one person is going to be able to change everything, and no one person is going to be able to even see everything. I mean, it's too vast. There's too many things you screwed up. But there's enough. There's enough that one person could do, especially enlightening others. Don't just do it yourself. Communicate with other people and get them to become awakened, so to speak, to the light. So the first thing is light over darkness. The next thing is to start seeing your own illusions. How do you see your own illusions? Well, they're guarded by egotism, so become more humble. Humility is a check on a lot of egotism, and it starts to break apart the illusions. The other way you can deal with illusions is through spiritual discipline. You'll have to read about that. I don't have time to tell you tonight. But or listen to some of the shows on it. Spiritual discipline works because you restrict your focus on a sense at a time and ensure that particular sense in that particular body is more accurately giving information. And the information that's inaccurate, you both discard, but at the same time, you try to get the sense to be able to more readily sense it in a sense response, of course. So that's what you want to do. And that helps to remove illusion. So you want to see the real from the unreal, right? Seeing reality isn't like, oh, there's a big sign, reality is here, you know, and nobody confers you on it. It confers it on you like, oh, here's your section of the reality. You know, now you can say you own it. No. Reality comes from an inner sense. Some people even claim that the fourth or sacral center, which helps to make us sacred, is the major player. How does it do that? It compares. It does a comparison between one thing and another, and another thing and another. And in its comparing back and forth, it sees the irregularities and knows that one or the other are wrong. And in that process, it is the method of achieving a less illusion state. It requires meditation for most people. And a state, different kinds of meditation for different ways of facing virtual, we'll say, illusions. Every person that is physically alive, that is still a human being, has some level of illusion. So I'm not just talking about, well, maybe a couple, everybody. Everyone has illusion, and some people have almost all of their sense is one of illusion. So seeing the real from the unreal is quite a job. It's not an easy job. But if you can do that and then work with others, and working as a group, this can become very effective. if each person says, well, I can see this, but you can see that, let's see what we can do together and see if we can help each other to become unillusioned, or at least reduce our illusion, so we are more effective in being able to stop evil. That's part of the sacred nature. Remember, that's part of the means and the plan. You need to do this in each one of your bodies, too, so it's fairly complicated. And remember, there's 7 senses, major senses, in each body. So you got 21 senses to be concerned with. 2 of them are spiritual senses, completely spiritual, and the other 5 are senses of the form of the body. So you have 5 physical senses that also have an etheric nature to them. You have 5 astral senses and 5 mental senses. All right, so looking at it from that standpoint, and each of those bodies, you have the spiritual component that is of how God is expressed and understood in those bodies through that vehicle as well. So I'll add that in there. All right, so if you can do this kind of spiritual discipline, you can reach yourself into a much, we'll say, better place to be able to see and understand evil. And that's a huge, huge plus, right? What else? Well, you need to get over your fear of death, because even if you do the first 2 things I said and you're really good at them, if you're still afraid to die, evil will get you. I know it sounds terrible, because so many people say, well, gee, if I have to get unafraid of death, how am I ever going to be able to deal with evil? Well, you know, it's a process. Once you get the first 2 that I mentioned down, starting to become unafraid of death is even natural. It's part of that. Yes, you have to work on it some after you get the part that I'm saying, and you got to improve upon it, because, you know, it isn't that easy to do, but you can get a boost up just by starting with the other 2 things first. That's sort of why it's in that order that I suggested. Now, if you are unafraid of death, evil will never get you, period. You're inoculated. And your ability to see evil will just go up exponentially. So that's how big of a deal it is. Now, of course, you've got to be unafraid of death, you must understand angels' wisdom and understand that consciousness goes on forever. Form dies. The form part of our personality goes away. But consciousness never goes. And what most people are really afraid of when they're afraid of death is loss of consciousness. Most people can tolerate the uncomfortableness and suffering that comes from the loss of form. It's not pleasant, but there's lots of things that are unpleasant. The idea that you never die in consciousness, that's a big deal, and that's the truth. You only grow in consciousness until you become part of your soul, go back to being your soul, in effect. And at no point are you dying, you're living greater and bigger and more. So what we call death is actually elevation in consciousness. But only in the dimension that you're living in then, because you lose the lower dimensions that you were conscious in before, but much more illusioned in and with much less light. So you see how these are interconnected. And why it is so very important, and I hope you are buying this, that you follow some of these suggestions, because I don't know any other way to rid this world of evil than some people, more than presently, start doing more of what I'm suggesting. It really isn't going to happen. I know the aliens aren't going to come in here and magically make it all better for us. They are doing some things, particularly in the interrelationship between humanity and the lower kingdoms, to help out, and it has to do with divine energies and stuff. And again, I shouldn't even say that. But the point is that you, with all of that knowledge, it doesn't change anything unless the human beings are responsive and they're going to do something as well. Because, you know, the old lead the horse to water thing, but, you know, you can't make a drink. Well, you can't make humans see evil or do something about it unless they choose to. So that's, God, that's why I'm kind of pushing this thing. All right, and let's talk about the last part of the plan and how it's enacted. And that's the idea of being able to put together that the universe is not chaos, and being able to see the great amount of beauty in the world. You can do it in two different ways. The first is to negate the chaos by doing those things that seem to be producing chaos, doing those things that reverse it by either organizing or marshaling others' help with you and using some of your energy and time to be able to create a more beautiful whatever you're going to do. Try to make everything that you do a bit more beautiful than not. Beauty improves the senses of all those who experience it, whereas chaos destroys them. Okay, and then the other thing to recall here and to put together is that if you're going to really use this model of chaos into beauty, you need to be really, really more, we'll say, disciplined in, we'll say, appreciating beauty, both other from others and in others, appreciating the beauty in all parts of all the kingdoms. I'm not talking about just the human kingdom. And by really being willing to sacrifice time, energy, what most people call money, which is compressed time and energy, or any other relevant thing that's important, maybe important to you, so that some element of beauty is improved. Beauty is not some artificial, like, oh, well, you have this little picture and you make it look better or something. That's not what I'm talking about. Beauty is a change in the nature of the world around you that causes evil to lose sense and causes goodness to gain sense. Evil loses sense because when it experiences beauty, because it can't create the illusion that the world is chaotic. And as well, when it tries to destroy the evil, which it wants to do, of course, it loses its sense faster than usually its ability to destroy is accomplished. Evil usually beats out evil. Beauty usually beats out evil because it is forever, provided that goodness continues to contribute to it, and evil loses its sense very rapidly when it's trying to go against significant levels of beauty. Smaller levels, where people are not very successful at creating, or where God's creation itself has been somewhat already destroyed, evil may be successful at destroying, but most of the time it pays a dear toll for it. So beauty is a tremendous weapon that can be used, and you do it by changing chaos into beauty against evil. It makes a planet sacred. It's one of the four ways. The four ways that you can create a sacred planet. And you can use it again, not just in the mental, or not just in the astral, but in the physical world, or vice versa, if you're thinking in that realm. In all the ways that we can be human, we can create beauty. You can also do it in a Buddhic sense, but you would have to, that's usually a jump for most people, and they can't do that yet. But at least, if you can, because if you do it Buddhically, then it works through all the other three worlds perfectly. And they all balance each other. That's a big beauty. Very few people could do that. You know, yeah, you'd probably have to be Beethoven to make the Ninth Symphony, or maybe you'd have to be some famous, super famous artist that everybody seems to find beauty in, maybe Da Vinci, and be able to paint the Mona Lisa or some other great work of art. Or maybe Rodin, or it doesn't matter. The point is that beauty has within it the ability to defeat evil. So it's important to recognize it. So many people think it's superficial or irrelevant. It's actually the highest source of defeating evil. Of the four that I mentioned, it's the Buddhic way. It leads you into Buddhic consciousness more. And it's the way that that is the most effective. If everything in an environment is reaching a high level of beauty, because beauty has different levels, so each way of the way up, I'm getting very faster because we're losing time, but it gets into higher and higher levels. The more it is, if it's really high and it's everywhere, evil can't get to you, and evil will be destroyed in that area. If it was all over the world like that, if we could instantly do it, evil would be off the planet in that minute, gone. I know it sounds hard to believe. I know it sounds so simplistic, but it can be done, and divinic energy is a part of it. If you work with those energies and you understand something about divinic energies and you understand something about the energy kingdom, it is helpful. But humans know very little about it. But if you do understand something about it, you could understand even more of what I'm explaining. I don't have more time to talk about it tonight. But at any rate, so let's kind of super sum this up as fast as I can in about 3 or 4 minutes. Okay, so the plan really is about changing how light is affecting us. It changes the process of how three worlds interact in the human sense between the human being and the planet itself. Some planets go one direction, some another. There's different ways to balance it all out, and also ray focus has something to do with it. Sacred planets have their own plan. Each planned sacred planet is in some way unique, I guarantee that. And the humans that are created, and there's seven rounds or seven races, each group of humans is unique. Every person individually is unique. What an amazing process that God has created. Just zillions of humans being created that are amazingly unique and can, if they choose, co-create with their creator. That's an amazing thing when you think about it. That's what evil has to contend with, but at the same time, there's lots of things that can go wrong. I've talked about them. And we can achieve through four methods in each part of the plan, we can achieve an effective way of creating a sacred planet. If you follow what I said during this very short, really 20, 25 minutes, the last part of the show here, you have some tools that you can use. You can talk about it with other people. It's great to share it with them. But try it for yourself as well, to know that what I'm talking about is the truth. Remember, I teach, but your job is to challenge that teaching. Let's see if it's really true. Maybe this guy's crazy, you know. He's talking about things that may not be true. Well, find out. You can check on everything I said in this show, well, except for certain crazy aliens maybe someplace, but you can check on almost everything else yourself in your life, and you will know whether or not what I'm saying is true or not. And you'll know, like, if you create beauty, you'll see that thing survives when something that is relatively ugly is easily destroyed by evil. Of course, evil doesn't get much from destroying really ugly things. It's the winner when it can destroy some level of evil, and that's when it really wins the day. We don't want that to happen. We want to prevent that. So try to go back over tonight's show if you can, because I covered a huge amount of information, revealed some things that have not been revealed before, and hopefully it's made a difference. And we know what sacred planets are, we know what evil is, we know how we can challenge it and deal with it, we know that there's something that can be done, and every individual, everybody listening to the show, has an opportunity to do something about it. Hey, isn't that great? I think it's great. And I hope that maybe when you get off, you have a little smile on your face and say, you know, things could be a lot better, and maybe I can do something to make that happen. That would just thrill me to know that that's the case. Let me know if that's how you think and feel after hearing tonight's show, because I would like that to be the outcome, so to speak, of experiencing what has been a interesting 2.5 hours. All right, so we're out of time. Yeah, I know. And hopefully this has made the kind of difference I hope it would. And remember, if you want to kind of better understand tonight's show, you might go back to last week even and listen to that show, especially if you didn't hear it. But even if you did, you might want to hear it because there's some things that kind of interconnect. Well, we're out of time. And And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.